He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
Well, Jay, you start.
Okay, this was not the way I planned to start, but I was watching television while I was having breakfast, as I often do, but that's neither here or there. And I came across an ad for a special sun visor, and it got me thinking about sun visors in cars. And so anyway, this was an ad. I don't usually promote products at $19.99, free shipping, and order now, and you'll get three or two or whatever. But it's called a tag visor, and it basically is not a visor to block out the light, but rather to filter the light and the glaring sun. And it got me thinking of how we use visors in cars, and I tend to be a visor down type of guy. My dad, who was a fighter pilot, was a visor up always and never brought it down even when the sun was in his eyes. And I find it that when you're driving, you know, if you're going east or west in the morning or in the evening, like if you're traveling on the Mass Pike, for instance, you can get caught, you know, early in the morning or early evening, depending on, which way you're going, with the sun just right in your eyes. And sun visors are helpful, and in some cars they are useless, and others they fold, or you can put them on the side. Anyway, I tend to use them a lot, and I even fantasize on having electric visors. Is one thing I haven't seen in cars yet, but maybe I'm missing something. Robin, you travel a lot. What are your thoughts?
I don't know why we need a push button for an electric visor. It is very easy to swipe your hand up to a visor and put it down, swing it out, and all that.
Not
to
the
your
one on
point,
the other
Jay,
side of
the
car.
Visors. What?
Not the one on the other side of the car.
Well, now that I was going to start into that. Sometimes I am known to reach over and put my passenger side visor down, especially when you go at certain angles, as you said, certain times of the day, the sun can be very penetrating at eye level from angles as well as straight ahead. And you can use the passenger visor for not very long periods of time, unless the road is absolutely straight, to block that sun coming in at an angle. For example, going from, for local people, they'll recognize these places, Hotchkiss School in Lakeville to Sharon on 41 is basically sort of a southward trip. And in the afternoon when the sun is going down on the western side, which is the right side, it can be quite blinding to a driver, but you can deflect that sun in certain time frames by using the passenger side visor. So I don't know that
I don't know
whether a push button is needed to use to move those visors or not. First of all, electric stuff means it usually takes a little time to get the visor to get down to where you want it versus just using your arm and fingers and getting it there in maybe a millisecond as opposed to maybe 2 or 3 seconds. And you've got to sit there and watch the visor so that you can stop pushing the button. This is what you would be doing if you had a push-button visor. So you could stop the visor in the hopefully the right location before you overshot that location or whatever. So I don't know, Jay. I think push-button visors, you know, these guys...
Coming? Okay, that's fine.
Is that fine? Yeah, that covers that front. Okay, go ahead. Next.
So it brings me... It gets
nice
me.
Idea, though.
Nice idea.
Let me just interject one more thing because I forgot. One of the things that Ford did a few years ago is they developed a visor within a visor so you could actually extend the visor, which is usually limited by the location of the visor in the headboard of cars where it bumps into where the rearview mirror is. But if you pull it down, you can extend some visors, and other manufacturers have developed this too. I think the Jeeps have it. I think my Cherokees have it, where you can pull out the tab at the end of each visor now and extend the visor length so that when it is in a somewhat lower position instead of up against the headboard, you can increase the The benefits of that visor.
Yeah, and there are all sorts of visors.
And that's not electric. That's a manual.
Some fold and you flat put the visor down and then release the secondary visor and put it to the side.
Correct. They had that one too. Yeah.
So
I think visor development
visor thing,
is about the limit.
I don't think
push buttons are necessary. It will close.
Yeah. So anyway, what I thought was exciting, and I'm trying to look for exciting new cars, and I'm not really seeing a lot of them, but one does come to mind, and that is the Volkswagen GTI, which I read an article about. The test driver had not been allowed to test drive it himself, but had ridden as a passenger. And it's interesting because, as I think you've pointed out, Robin, the Volkswagen Golf is not, the base model is not set to be sold here in the U.S., even though I think worldwide it is probably still Volkswagen's number one selling vehicle. But the GTI is the sporty version of the Golf that has been out since 1976. And I think it came out here in the U.S. in the detuned version in 1978 or maybe 1980. Historically, it was a two-door only little hatch. Sports hatch. The newest version, I think, is a four-door. I'm not even sure it'll come out as a two-door. It will still be available with a standard transmission, which is really great news. And power will still come out of Volkswagen / Audi's 2-liter turbo, but putting out just a little bit more power than it did in the previous generation. Version. And I think it's going to be around 240 horsepower. But the car is probably a little bit heavier. It seems to handle very well. It looks good, and hopefully it has a great future.
Do we think the VR6 will still be one of the lines within the GTI system where you get the big engine,
the
all-wheel drive and all that?
The Golf R, which is really the top of the line in the Golf line, has had the same four-cylinder turbo for some time now. The VR6 was, I think, the fifth generation of the Golf was the last version to have a VR6 in it. It was a cool-sounding engine, but it's gone now, out of the Golf anyway.
Well, the interesting thing about the Golf is because it has been such a wonderfully selling car for VW worldwide, and I think for a long time in the U.S., is what will the price range of the GTI do? Will it come down a bit so that more people can reach up and buy it and get that version of the GTI of the Golf that will be the remaining version available? Or is it still going to be, I don't even know what the price range is right now.
I think it's going to be right smack where it is now, which is, around $30,000.
Okay.
I think the base versions retail for just under like $28,000, $29,000. And if you load them up, you get to 33, 34,
about where the average price of new cars is, isn't it?
Right there,
Jay. Now in the U.S., 35,000 or 36, I think we've almost crept up to in terms of the average sales price of cars in the U.S. And that is beyond the reach of many people. I know, I'm sure. You know, when you talk about financing new cars. And they're offering 6-year, 7-year, 8-year financing situations. The easy math for people before you add in the interest rates of the banks and or manufacturers is to divide the price of the car you're looking at by the number of months you're trying to get a loan at. And you're going to get a baseline of what your monthly payment's going to be. You don't have to wait for the finance people to tell you. Except that's a baseline because the 0% financing, I think it's $17.76 per thousand for a 5-year car loan at 0%. And 0% is beyond the reach of many people because it's for those with the highest credit rating. But it's frightening when you divide a $35,000 up to a $50,000 car by 60 months, and you're paying $400 or $500 a month to pay that loan off, and $400 to $500 a month is a lot for so many people. That's why we lease. Now, I'm leasing a Jeep Cherokee that retailed, listed on paper at, I think it was $38,000 for 3 years or 36,000 miles, and my payments are $271 a month. And that is affordable for me.
How much did you put down?
And that includes the tax on the vehicles, too, although one of the payments each year it goes up because when the town tax rates come out, they have to lump sum payment. But once you finish leasing that car or truck or whatever it is, vehicle, you have a vehicle that is going to be in the lease cost you to buy it if you want to buy it out. And then you divide that cost by 3 or 4 years, and you're back up to $300-$400 a month for the next 3 or 4 years beyond the lease rate. It's frightening how long it takes to pay off a vehicle if you purchase it at these long rates.
So, question.
But leasing is the way it's been going for years. Jay knows that. And it's been mainly the only reason many people can afford to go and get a new car.
And also, we remember, because you've been doing this show for quite a while, when leasing started, and it was designed as the antidote to people who could no longer
purchase.
Right. And I think it was.
Well, and
still the antidote, only more so.
Right, know? Because the other thing that has happened is that the. Loans have gotten longer, and you get underwater faster. Can we go on to Nissan and Mitsubishi?
Nissan and Mitsubishi are, in my mind, in
life
the water. two manufacturers that are part of the same alliance with Renault, and both manufacturers are doing very poorly. I mean, I cannot even name Nissan products, except, I mean, I know the brand, the model names. I'm not even sure what is still selling, except for the compact SUV that Nissan has.
The Rogue,
which is, you know, until a year or two ago, was one of the best-selling vehicles in the country, and it is arguably a very, very...
attractive vehicle.
It's attractive because it's reliable, it does everything well, but a manufacturer cannot survive on just one product. And other than that, there is not much in the Nissan pipeline. And same for Mitsubishi. And I just actually was reading that Mitsubishi actually killed the Pajero, which was their signature SUV and probably their you know, it was a great, very truck-like SUV, very popular in the 80s and 90s. It sold well in this country, and it sold well the world, including in Africa, where it was a very reliable vehicle. That vehicle is dead. We're left with, I think, the vehicle that's called the Outlander, which is a kind of a crossover vehicle. And actually, the best deal for Mitsubishi Outlanders, I think, right now is I was offered to buy one by a Volkswagen dealer not too long ago, who had just bought a bunch of them from Hertz. And I know I'm going on a tangent here, but Hertz, as we know, is going through a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And part of the deal they've made to stay afloat is to sell, I think, a little less than 200,000. We're looking at 180,000 cars out of their roughly half a million vehicle fleet. That's it. That's pretty much, what is it, 30, 40% of their...
it could be a very good place to go buy a good used car, used vehicle, because most of them don't get more than 15,000 miles on before they try to sell them off and replace them anyways.
I think these are absolutely brand new. They were just delivered by Mitsubishi to Hertz.
Really?
And now Hertz is part of their... legal proceedings has to get rid of them. It's just so they have like 0 miles. They're brand new.
The question is, will they be sold at wholesale levels to the public, or will they be bought by dealers, as you suggest? Your dealer did purchased a batch of them, and he probably got them at a very good price, and therefore will be able to offer them maybe better than they could be purchased at the Mitsubishi dealership.
Yeah. So, you know, who wants to drive a Mitsubishi?
This is the way the market goes in the automotive industry, guys. Everybody who listens, it is amazing how these people manage to sell cars and the prices seem to go down as the cars move around from dealer to dealer in many cases.
But my point is too is that you don't have to spend $38,000 or $40,000 on buying a new car. You can shop smart and find there are a bunch of cars out there that can be great buys. They're either certified pre-owned or slightly used or even brand new that are either heavily discounted or just great buys. And That's the story, my story on Nissan and Mitsubishi.
Okay. Maybe we can move to Tesla. I happen to be looking at my laptop right now, and there's a major section in this week's Automotive News on Tesla and how they are continuing to evolve way ahead of the potential rivals. But this section I'm looking at in this week's edition is the great advancement that is coming forth fairly quickly in the charging industry. And Tesla is at the forefront of it, not just in the development of batteries and charging capability, but with their charging stations that they have around the country that are going to be enabled to be charging at direct charge, direct current charging, which is going to be the area which I think is going to basically transform the acceptability of electric cars into a mass electric car market. Direct chargers are definitely coming of age, and they will allow very quickly recharging of batteries for people who travel long distances and don't want to sit there and wait the current wait times of 30 minutes or longer to get their batteries up to speed if they're trying to make a 600 to 800 mile trip on a daily basis, of which there are people that do that. But you've got level one chargers, which is 120-volt AC power that you can plug in at your house and is the least expensive way to put a charging system in if you own an electric car. And you got the electric two chargers, which is used 240-volt AC power, and a plug replied by higher power home appliances, such as dryers, big air conditioning systems, and that like. And they will charge faster than the level one, but then you get the direct current fast charging, which is sometimes called referred to as level three, and they require high power installation at the point. Most often, as this article says, at the public power stations. But they provide 50 kilowatts to 150 kilowatts of power and can charge vehicles.
Will this appease your
range per half hour of charge or less. But that's going to transform the electrification of vehicles, I think, once it becomes commonplace. In the meantime, the only alternative to full electric that I think is really roaring ahead is the hybrid vehicles. Toyota's ahead in that department as far as vehicle manufacturers are concerned. I see that there's the hydrogen development is coming to a halt along some auto lines because the costs are prohibitive and 10 years out before they could possibly be competitive to electric cars and hybrid car systems. And hydrogen, they spent a stupid amount of money on hydrogen car development, in my opinion. And some hydrogen places in California, I don't know whether any in Connecticut. I know buses and some trucks are using hydrogen power, but I don't think it's ever going to hit the mass automobile market. Jay, you might have some comment on that.
No, I think you're right. I think the concept is brilliant, but the network is just never, the infrastructure is just never going to be there. I mean, we've been talking about the electric recharging stations and that infrastructure, and you've just made a point that Tesla has proven that in time we will get to that, but I don't think we're going to see a hydrogen distribution, infrastructure network anytime soon. So I think that is, you are correct. Hydrogen is dead for now.
This is the thing. It's like zombies. These, you know, things that are dead then reemerge X, Y, Z. X years later, we'll see how much longer we're doing the show.
You know, another story, if I can just interject before Jill says something else. There's another article in this particular week of Automotive News that says that Elon Musk defines his truck as a weird truck and says that the reason he developed it is because Tesla just wanted to have a weird truck. Now, I don't know whether that's the reason to develop something that's going to be mass marketable and has apparently, what is it, Jay, 150,000 pre-orders or more, maybe?
I don't know.
But it is truly weird.
It was a great marketing stint, and it's going to help everybody. So
it's going to help everybody. Okay, that's Jay's comment on that. But
all right, so let's
have Musk admit that he just wanted to have a weird truck in his lineup to be non-competitive by anybody else. He is definitely going to succeed at that level.
Listen, let's talk safety work zones. It is summer. We've got 3 minutes left.
Yes, yeah, so... You know, another safety tidbit, you know, we have a lot of work zones typically during the summers, whether you're traveling on highways, on the Mass Pike, or locally.
Local roads.
We've been doing a lot of work here in my town, in Lakeville. Just a reminder to pay attention, have some respect for the people who are working and, you know, putting their lives at risk, really. So when you get to a work zone, there usually is an attendant. Follow direction, but also don't trust them
blindly.
100%.
Don't trust them blindly.
You also
because...
can't see some of these guys who stand in shadows, even if they have these
Absolutely.
Bright vests on either.
Yep.
And they don't look at you. They're often looking at their cell phones, which is even more alarming because they're supposed to be conducting traffic safety control. And to have their cell phone in one hand, have their left hand on a post that rotates between stop and advance, I guess whatever the other one is, come forward and be looking at their cell phone. You can sit there for seconds sometimes when the traffic has ended going the one way and the sign rotates because the guy's still looking at his cell phone. So you're right, and over where I am broadcasting from today, we're on roads that are used by walkers in the morning from daylight through mid-morning, often with baby strollers, dogs on leashes, and then you've got scooters, which I've talked about, and I have one, and you've got cars traveling, and you've got bicyclists, bicycle packs roaming the roads, and this is one of Jill's favorite topics over in our broadcast area, because these packs of bicycles, and they're 10 to 20 strong over here, take up whole lanes, and with bicycle packs, and they all converge at one point, and you better come to a halt and just sit there and wait till they split out and you get the walkers away from the bicycle packs and the dogs and all that before you move forward. And anybody who's not looking at the road is really not doing the right thing.
Right, and I just want to throw in, you will be quite surprised, but they're doing some massive paving on Route 7 today. And the reason, or last week, and the reason I mention this is because not everybody is aware of the direction, even though they're being directed to certain places. The people who are doing the directing don't necessarily know where you need to go. So that does create a need for a little bit of communication. I found myself going south when I needed to go north, and one guy was impossible, and the other guy was really nice. He said, just turn around, but... anyone, again, who drives that stretch of road knows that turning around there... Anyway, I ultimately turned around and then ended up in just the biggest traffic stop tailback that you could hope for because it was being... And then when I wanted to turn onto my road, it was blocked by machinery. So there's a certain amount of attention and communication that is required. So I wanted to say.
Well, well, well. A final Tesla note... Somebody's ripped apart the Model Y, and the comment about the Model Y electric crossover has been analyzed. Is it the person doing the teardown says he thought the Model 3 was 10 years ahead of everybody else? This guy named Monroe told Automotive News. Then we tore apart the Model Y, and we're pretty much convinced that the Model Y is another 3 to 4 years ahead of the Model 3. So Tesla, Jay, to your credit and support, is just continuing to blow away the electric car development world in terms of technology advancement. And I think it's going to stay that way for a while.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.